Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today I have a fabulous guest who brought me her pilot, something I don't get often. Now let's see if I got her name right, because I screwed up already tonight before we even started recording. We'll try. Sassy Mohan.
Yeah, well, the H is silent, but you're pretty close. It's like,
okay, Mohan, okay, no problem. Her pilot is here, how to hack birth control.
Yeah.
Which is funny, people, another comedy. I'm really excited. I don't get comedies often. I get these live trams lately. So welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I know you've gotten this question 1 billion times. So you're going to get 1 billion more just because... How did you come to this concept of how to hack birth control? I mean, do you and your girlfriend sit at the bar on a Friday night when, you know, you haven't left maybe even your house yet, having a few early drinks and this came up?
I mean, that would be a really fun origin story, but it's unfortunately nothing like the actual origin story. Oh. I do a lot. That could be like a whole episode in itself, actually. But I do a lot of social media commercials, and a lot of them involve hacks. So it's like for a lot of brands, you know, like how to hack your drink to make like a Bud Light Sunday, whatever, you know. And so I've been doing a bunch of these, and it was in 2019, and I just kind of had this idea of how to hack birth control about taking all the kind of techniques and things I've learned through doing social media commercials and translating them for good instead of for selling products, you know, and like actually educating people and making people laugh. And so kind of like packaging sort of sensational material in a digestible way that will keep people's minds interested in it without like being preachy at the same time. So not like a bar with my friends.
Now, would you say you were preachy in this at all? I mean, I do hear preaching in this, saying you got options. You preach that quite often.
Right.
So would you say you're being preachy?
No, I mean, I actually tried really hard not to be, because I find that, you know, when someone tries to like beat you over the head with an opinion or something, it kind of always produces the opposite results. You know, if someone's just like, you have to think this way, you're always just like, I don't want to because you're telling me I have to. So with this, I tried to make really sort of serious topics like lighthearted, because I find, especially today with everything going on with abortion rights and women's rights and stuff, it is a serious issue and it affects a lot of people. But I think that the real underlying thing is just getting women access to birth control, which is way more accessible in this country than I even realized before I started going into researching this. And I just think a lot of people don't realize it. And I mean, it's just sort of like, to be a modern woman, which is, I guess, every woman today, because we don't live in the olden times, it's like having access to birth control is just something that makes us, I don't know, more affluent, better in society. And it's just, I just wanted to show that to people, show how they can get the sort of unlock the key to having control of your own bodies.
Well, I would say you're trying to enlighten people. I mean,
yeah.
It's 30 minutes of constant updates on this and that. I mean, if somebody wanted to really get into this, you'd have to watch this 2 or 3 times to take all the notes. Because I have a page of notes, and I watched it once, and I'm not female, so I'm really not looking for birth control.
You're now more informed, and anytime
your
girlfriends ask you, be like, I know exactly where you can get the IUD. I know you can do this. I mean, like, that's the thing, is that I didn't know half of this stuff when I went into it. I even had female crew members tell me that they went on different forms of birth control while we were making the project, because they also didn't know that this type of stuff was accessible to them in an affordable way. And so, I mean, it really is just about educating people, but I also love making people laugh. So it's like the best merger of both worlds, right?
Yeah, I agree. Though, research, I mean, you must get this question again a lot. How much research do you have to do? Because, I mean, this is constant input. I mean, overload. I would say to a point of overload at times.
I know. There's so much. I wish that I had had the time or even the patience to write the whole, I don't even know, you could do a 2-hour thing on the different types that there is. I really just started with what I knew was accessible and then kind of sort of stemmed from there. And I found like Planned Parenthood and different sites like that have really comprehensive guides to even different methods of birth control that I didn't even touch on in this, that I never heard of before, but I guess people use. I mean, someone has to. But yeah, I mean, and the funniest thing when I was researching it was the weird ads that I started getting, like on Facebook and stuff. I started getting like in vitro ads and like adoption ads and all of these weird things that I was like, okay, this is creepy that this is coming up here. But a few actually led me to more research. So in a way it was helpful.
Yeah, I love how those ads pop up on things. I really wish if you're a director or a writer, they would give you other people's shorts saying, hey.
Oh my God, that would be so cool.
Like, that to me would be something I need. As, you know, doing my show and I like to interview new people.
Yeah.
Give me some shorts I haven't seen. Come on, Facebook. Those are the ads I need.
Or like musicians or anything like that. Like finding something. Like, you know, like music you can use or people to work with. Now, those are the type of ads I would love to see.
So you brought up people. Now,
yeah.
When you were casting this, did you know that your couples you chose, or did you choose them because they had a certain look?
Well, one of the people in it I know because we are engaged and getting married next year. The blonde guy in the pharmacy scene, that's my fiance. And he also co-produced this with me. Pretty much everyone else I cast, I hadn't met before. There's two actors who are in the infomercial series who both had left LA during the pandemic that like filmed those outside of it, who I've known for years. But the casting was really just like, I had certain types that I wanted to fill of just making sure that all colors of the rainbow were represented, since women don't just look one way or the other way or whatever. And then from there, a lot of it were just like ambiguous roles. And we had something crazy, like over 6,000 submissions or some, it was definitely up there, like nuts amount of auditions to go through. There's a lot of really talented people that submitted. And in the end, I'm really happy with the cast that we came up with. I had an awesome friend / casting director who helped me go through everything. It took a long time to get to this cast, let me tell you.
Okay. There's a woman that, I guess she's the woman I see all the time. She's the announcer, the I call her. The narrator. Yeah. Did you tell her to speak at a certain speed? Like, did you play with that speed at all?
I mean, we definitely tried a bunch of different things. The inspiration for that role is actually this flight video on Virgin Airlines that they used to have. They don't have it anymore because I've looked for it since I made this. But there is this one video, you know, with the takeoff of like, you know, like buckle your seatbelts or whatever. And it was this really, they did it in this really funny, like sardonic way. And there's this like, And also another woman is there's like the Orbitz woman, you know, who has the gum and like she's always like that. Like those were kind of my two inspirations of the role of sort of just like the cutesy female announcer woman, but on overdrive because like no one's ever actually that happy or that perky in real life. And so and the funny thing about Xanthi too, the actress who plays the narrator, she's Australian. You'd never know. I forget.
Oh, I had no idea.
I know. When I actually talked to her and she has an Australian accent, I'm like, oh, right. You're not American. I forget because I've heard you speak an American accent a million times. So, yeah.
So did you adjust her speech then or no? She just always speaks at that speed.
No, she actually usually speaks at that speed. I mean, she nailed the audition. Like she just delivered it in the cadence and hit the right inflections of words, because so many of the jokes are subtle, like baked into, you know, the delivery of her lines. And she got the sense of humor that I was going for, which is sort of like I don't know, like charmingly scathing was one of review put it, is the way that I was intending her to do. And so, yeah, sometimes she speaks super fast. Sometimes she speaks super slow. She's actually a professional VO actress, which is probably why she can handle all of that crazy enunciation of words and so many different accents that she can do outside of American.
So let's go back to the beginning of the pilot, the sure. Wedding dress. Like, how many different wedding dresses did you try with a chastity belt going, yep, that's the one? It could have been just one.
No, well, we had a phenomenal costume designer, a woman named Drea, who I've worked with before, and a phenomenal production designer, a woman named Lahia, who I've also worked with before. And they happen to also be friends. So they very much coordinated the two elements, the dress and the chastity belt. The chastity belt was a piece of work that we actually looked, or I should say Lahia looked, for an actual chastity belt. And the only ones she found were like, you know, in West Hollywood. And she's like, I don't think these are the type of chastity belts you're actually looking for. Like, they were like real sexual foreplay chastity belts. And so we constructed our own from random, I don't know, there's an actual belt, there's the lock, there's the key. And like, what we had to do is Lauren, the actress who plays the woman getting married, she actually was super glued into the chastity belt because like it was just something we made. So she had to like lift up the dress, and then like it was like Olivia Newton-John in Grease, you know, where she had those pants sewn on in the end during the where she's wearing those thick black or those really tight black leather pants. It was like that with her, where she just was like, I'm just wearing this chastity belt for the next 3 hours. And that's just what my life is.
Hold on. And how uncomfortable was that for your actor?
She actually said it wasn't uncomfortable. She thought it was really hysterical. She took all these photos with it and stuff. She loved it. She's really nice too. She had a great time. She was like, this is the weirdest costume I've ever been in. And I love it. I'm super behind it. And she, I mean, her character was really fun too, with like when she gets to throw things at her husband and the dance scene and stuff. She was really a pleasure to work with. Not too many actresses would be a pleasure to work with in a chastity belt.
Well, probably not. Now, you do have a shot on a rooftop.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not so much worried about the rooftop. I'm more worried about whether gawkers looking at the rooftop all the time. Because it totally looks like you're setting up a sex scene.
I actually am really happy that you said that, because I've been waiting for someone to actually make that note, but no one's brought it up yet. I mean, the reason I wrote the rooftop is like, I know I am from New York City originally. I have lots of friends who live in New York City, and rooftops there are their own thing. You know, like people definitely have sex on rooftops. They have parties on rooftops. It's a whole thing. So there, I don't know if there were gawkers looking. I mean, it's downtown Los Angeles. There's tons of weird stuff to look at. So I guarantee we probably weren't the weirdest thing that you could see out a window of one of those skyscrapers. And that one was also really fun to shoot too. Besides, of course, lugging film equipment up when the elevator stopped, the extra three flights of stairs to actually get onto the roof itself was an interesting experience. But other than that, it was great.
The drugstore. Did you just ask for a drugstore? Because that's not a set. That looks like a real drugstore.
That was a real drugstore. I actually really like these questions. Thank you for asking these interesting questions.
I did watch it. I don't know if most interviews you do don't watch as much. 2 minutes ago, okay, I'm done.
Right, exactly. I mean, the pharmacy was funny because that was the one set I was unsure of how we were going to actually get. Because, you know, we had a budget for these, but there aren't a whole lot of pharmacies for rent, even in Los Angeles and during the pandemic, because we shot this in November of 2020, right after the election. And I had walked around where I live in Hollywood, West Hollywood, with a friend of mine. And there's an area of like Little Russia right here. And there's a lot of Russian pharmacies. And I have a friend who speaks fluent Russian. And so we just walked around to these different pharmacies. And she was like talking to them in Russian, being like, can we shoot here for X, Y, and Z or whatever? And we got a really nice pharmacy. We were all set to go. And then the twist, the owner had a heart attack 5 days before we were going to shoot. I mean, he turned out okay, but because he had a heart attack, he couldn't be there during the hours that we wanted to shoot. And because of liability reasons, he didn't want to not be there, which I understand because it's a pharmacy. So we scrambled and we found one last minute. And that was the most expensive set out of all the ones, since we had to pay full price for, but it was only a half day. And we really plowed through those shots as quickly as humanly possible. I think it actually turned out for the better, because there was, even though that is a small pharmacy in the film, the one we were going to shoot at was even smaller. So in the end, it worked out better, although albeit pricier.
I only have one more location we want to talk. Well, I want to talk about. You can have as many as
I'll
you
talk
want
about locations for days.
School.
Yes.
Again, not a set, I don't think. I think it looks like an actual classroom, like maybe a nursery school, I was thinking.
It was a preschool. That one was also funny because I wrote that. I do freelance commercials for a school, a technical college. So I was hoping that we could just get a free location through there. And turn out, because of the pandemic, they said no, because there was different rules about the campus and everyone was remote. So we went on PeerSpace and we found a couple different schools. And this one, I was like, wait, I didn't even think of it. I was like, we should have this in a preschool, because that would just add another layer of humor to the scene. And we told the guy, like, you know, it's this film about birth control, whatever. And he also thought the concept was hysterical. And he was there, like the owner of the school, like in the background at the end, like laughing, like, you know, quietly at everything we were doing. And that one was also super fun to film at, because it was so big. And we could open up all of the like the sides of the school, so there's so much air. You know, all the stuff you have to think about during COVID that you never had to think about before.
So you bring up rent at one point as a tool for a condom. How did that come to be?
Wait, what was the question? Bring up what?
Rent. You make the musical a comment rent? About, you keep going on about rent, but you use it as a tool for wearing a condom. So I was, explain that to me, please.
Oh, like this, when she sings on the rooftop?
Why rent? Yeah. Of all the options you had, rent comes up. And I was laughing. I thought it was a good joke.
Yeah. I mean, rent is my favorite musical of all time. I saw that like more times than I care to admit on Broadway when I was younger. And one thing that I always thought was funny when I was dating people and, like, you know, occasionally running into a guy who tried to pressure you to not use a condom, and he'd be like, oh, it's okay, I've been tested. And I'm like, like, what are you, like, you don't know me, I don't know you. Like, and then I was like, you know, like, you can, like, you can't abort AIDS. Like, you know what I mean? Like, a condom is going to be the thing that prevents us from getting AIDS in a situation, which is the worst case scenario, I feel like, in terms of an STD that you could pick up. And so I always kind of had a joke in my head about rent and condoms and how, if you want to avoid getting AIDS, you should just use a condom. So yeah, that's where that one came from. That's actually one I've been sitting on for like 10 years.
Oh, that's good. See, rent did pay off all those times seeing it.
Right.
Was this always a comedy? Did you ever think of writing it just as like something that you would submit to schools, like an educational film?
Yeah, I actually did flirt with that idea a little bit. I watch a lot of PBS. I freaking love the PBS app that they've done. And there's so many great documentaries on there about a million different topics, right? Like really well done pieces of work. And I was watching that when I started writing Birth Control, and I kind of thought about it and I was like, no, I just want to be funny. And like, I think that I could access more people by making it more of a fictitious kind, you know. It's not like the scenarios are fictional, but I think that more people might be willing to watch it if it wasn't just like cut and dry, you know, like if people are laughing, they're more willing to stick around. I found anyway.
You have some wonderful animation. Like, I think we should touch on that. Was that added, obviously added after, but did you watch it without the animation, or was always planned to be in there, and who did it?
Okay. Yeah, definitely always planned it. I will give a major shout out to my friend Sam, who did all the GFX on this project, and the graphic designer Arlene, who was a gem, because from the beginning, I was like, I need a bunch of random things. Like, I don't even, like, some of them I know what they are. Some of them they're just going to come up. And she's like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. And I was like, okay, like, I need an eagle that looks like in 30 different positions. I need flying condoms. I need like a diploma. I need, you know, all the random stuff in the game show. I was like, I need curtains that look like a uterus, like, you know, like just random things like that. And Arlene, she was just game and just like turned over these great graphic designs. And Sam, the GFX guy, we've been working together for like 5 years now on so many projects. And he's like the only person left that I actually use Google Chat to still communicate with, which I love. That's how we communicate through everything, is that way. And so he and I just, like, that game show was super intense. We had to break it down. And like, usually, you know, you have like, this is GFX shot 5 and GFX shot 10 or whatever. We broke it down shot by shot because there was just so much going on. And I think there was like 280 shots at the end of it. So it was like GS_1, you know, and so like each one was its own animation. And so I pre-built them in the edit room just to show what they should look like with really crude whatever examples. And then he and I would go back and forth. And then even from there, there was like, I had to then do further touch-ups with the green screen, you know, to expedite the process. And then they would go back to him and then go back to me and then go to the colorist and this. And it was like, that was I am very happy. I'm super OCD because that's the only way that was could ever be accomplished in like a streamlined fashion. You know what I mean?
Did you ever think of handing out the bare minimum stickers at showings?
Yes. And I actually did at the, we had a producer screen and we had a bunch left over because you could only buy those in like bulk of 75 stickers. So on set, when we actually shot it, everyone ended up having one. And then at one of the, like this cast and crew screening and then the producer screenings, we have those. And like, we also made little condoms that say how to hack birth control on them and has the website. And, we had like, guess how many in a jar, like guess how many birth control pills. They were mints, but like, and then you like won a prize and stuff. There's so many cool, I feel like, you know, like things that can be made from this that haven't even, the surface hasn't even begun to be tapped on yet.
Well, I think if I'd follow your website, there'd be t-shirts, a poster, the whole nine yards. I think you can do everything with this.
You know, you've given me some ideas.
Well, this is me watching your short. Now, near to the end, we have a bunch of angels. We have a sex birth control. Was there something you didn't cover with the angels that you thought you should have afterwards?
I mean, I feel like... No, I think that I covered everything that I wanted to accomplish in this movie. I mean, like, there's so many like small little characters in there that I love. Like, Sam and I, the GFX guy, we have this joke how we want to do a spinoff of the uterus cowboy and the backpack cat, and they go around and like save, like hand out birth control or something like that. Or like a whole like show from the Cucker Snarlson character and just like that type of stuff. I mean, it was really fun with the show, kind of like almost everything I had come up with before we shot, but then the things that organically came up while we were shooting were just hysterical. And I was so lucky to work with such creative people the entire time.
Now, other than the narrator, who I think is a defined character, did you ever thought who's going to be spinned off in the next one? Is what I'm trying to figure out. Because I thought, like, I'm not saying there's not a plot. There is definitely a plot, but there's no real characters to attach onto other than the narrator.
Right. So the series, the How to Hack series is basically the next one is How to Hack Climate Change. And then the next one would, you know, How to Hack Voting Rights. And I have two narrators, one that you've met and another male narrator that, you know, we have yet to meet yet. I have yet to meet myself. And so it's a 10 episode series that I'm developing with my managers. And so How to Hack Birth Control is the pilot of it.
Okay.
I would be remiss to say that I had planned that from the beginning. I didn't. I just made How to Hack Birth Control. And then as it came together, I was like, yeah, this could actually be a whole series, kind of like Netflix Explained or like those types of shows, you know, that cover different topics in each episode.
Has this had many public screenings yet?
No, it's just in the festival circuit now. You can watch it virtually currently, actually. I don't know when this podcast will actually go up. It's soon.
I promise.
Yeah.
Soon.
It's playing in Cinequest virtually from now through the 17th of April. And it's playing in two other festivals virtually. The Nova Fest, which is really cool because it's a Northern Virginia Film Festival. And I'm from Arlington, Virginia. So I'm like, yes, my hometown likes me, you know, and the DC Web Fest. And then there's going to be actual in-person screenings for different festivals as the summer progresses. It's really just starting to get into festivals now. Like the results started coming in kind of like a month or 2 months ago. And so I knock on wood, there will be a way for people to continue to watch this virtually or in person through the end of the year.
Okay. So maybe my next question might not mean anything yet, because what kind of questions do you get this? Do you get women emailing you? That's what I was hoping to go for and saying, hey, thank you for this, all this information. Or do you get women going, what are you getting at?
No, the response that I've actually gotten has been overwhelmingly positive. I also think that this is, you know, it's not being shown in places where people would probably respond overwhelmingly negatively to it. But I mean, what I really liked about every time that I've attended a screening or a festival that's happened, the discussion afterwards isn't necessarily even about birth control, but about women's rights and our sort of how we're treated in terms of sex. That's really kind of the overarching thing I wanted to address with birth control, is that there's such a stigma against women in such a contradictory way that there is to men, right? Like, women do X, Y, and Z and they're a slut, men do that and they're awesome. And what I think has kind of come out of that is, you know, women today date. That's just how life is. It's not the 1800s. And a lot of women are kind of find themselves ashamed of, you know, being too prude or not being prude enough or this or that or everything in between. And they let guys kind of take advantage of them. And that's like, you're talking about that condom scene with the Rent or whatever. That scene isn't so much about reminding, I mean, it is about reminding people you should use a condom with people you don't know, but like about asserting yourself if a guy is trying to pressure you not to use a condom, you know, because a lot of women are like, oh, but what if he doesn't like me? Or what if, you know, whatever, whatever. And after these screenings, almost always the discussion kind of veers into that sort of ground of like, women feeling represented and women feeling emboldened just to be okay with themselves. And I really think that today that's very important, especially with the way, you know, like there's all this stuff going on with teens and like TikTok and Instagram and body image and like, you know, just the way women are treated in politics. You look at the Supreme Court hearings we just had and stuff where women are constantly criticized for being themselves. And what I'm trying to say with birth control is that it's okay to be who you are and to be on birth control, because most of the country actually is on or has been on birth control. And that's not something you should be ashamed of. You shouldn't be ashamed of being a woman who wants to date or doesn't want to date, because that's just who you are, you know? And that's really what I want birth control to help people come to realize.
Okay, well, we're getting near the end. You have two fun questions. And if you've listened to my interviews, you know one of them. And if you haven't, then you're out of luck.
All right.
So first question, I always ask everybody, it's their first time on the show, what's your favorite film?
Run, Lola, Run.
Okay.
Do you know the film?
I'm not even going to comment on that.
Of course. I shouldn't have asked that. I'm sorry. That's kind of funny, though.
But that's okay.
A lot of people don't, but... I'm sorry. Okay. I take back my question.
No, I'm just laughing that you would even ask me if I know that film.
I know. I feel
good. If you put some foreign film like the guy did the other day, that was impressive that I hadn't seen it. A movie that you've seen recently or a movie that you recommend to people they've never seen?
That they've never seen? I mean, recently, I really liked Worst Person in the World, but a lot of people have seen that movie. Trying to think. Okay, here's a wild card. We still get Netflix DVDs because I haven't left the 2000s and I really like getting Netflix DVDs.
I love DVDs.
Right?
They're great. I don't have the I live in Canada. We don't have the Netflix. We have no more DVD companies here.
What?
Annoys me. They're
all
gone.
I'm so sorry. We had a Canadian version.
I used it for years and then they disappeared.
I was supporting them,
but I didn't even need to anymore just because I like the DVD so much.
I know.
We're off topic completely.
It's okay. No. It's like I joke about how we're like the last two people who actually get Netflix DVDs in the mail. But so my queue, though, I haven't updated. And so right now we're watching movies I put on my queue 10 years ago. And a recent movie I saw that I didn't even know about, but I did 10 years ago and I put it on, is called Romance and Cigarettes. And it's a musical starring James Gandolfini and Susan Sarandon. And it also has the actress who plays Janice, but she plays his daughter. And it has like Mandy Moore is his daughter. Steve Buscemi is in it. You know, it's got this phenomenal cast. And I'm going to blank on the director's name. He's an actor who was in The Big Lebowski. And this was his directorial debut. And it's not the best film of all time, but James Gandolfini and Kate Winslet are having an affair and they sing songs and dance. And like, I don't know, what more do you need than that? Really?
Well, I'm impressed. You found something I haven't seen. Good work. So you have a great evening. Thank you for this fun pilot and have a good night.
Thank you. You too.